1968, a review of the past year's accomplishments in aeronautical research and space exploration. NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, presents a special report, Highlights of the Year, Air and Space Milestones for 1968. In 1968, both opened and closed with attention focusing on the moon. January saw the last of five successful automated landings on the lunar surface. December ensured a place in history for the year as man himself, three of them in fact, journeyed 250,000 miles away from home to look at the moon firsthand and returned to Earth safely to tell others of their epic voyage. In between January and December, the year was crowded with notable events. Preparations for manned assignments, fundamental research closer to home for both present and futuristic space and aviation needs, and a substantial amount of effort and success in the orderly examination of the Earth and its neighbors by unmanned investigators, controlled remotely from the ground.
I'd say the highlight of the year was the start of space astronomy.
That's Dr. John Naugle, NASA's Associate Administrator for Space Sciences and Applications. He's in charge of all unmanned space investigators, including the two 1968 vehicles which opened a scientific door to ground-based astronomers. Astronomers whose stellar observations had previously been obscured by our planet's distorting atmosphere.
The first Radio Astronomy Explorer A was launched on the 4th of July to study low-frequency radio noise above the ionosphere. Then the second major advance in astronomy and really the outstanding accomplishment in the whole space science and applications area, and an accomplishment that I think will be comparable in historical importance to the historic Apollo 8 mission, was the launch of the Orbiting Astronomical Observatory on the 7th of December. That observatory gave astronomers the ability to look in the far ultraviolet range of the spectrum, which is absorbed above the atmosphere. The two experiments, the experiment from the University of Wisconsin and the experiment from the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory, are both working successfully. They've observed a large number of stars. I can't at this stage yet quote any exciting or puzzling data, but we do expect that there will be a solid, substantial increase in our knowledge of astronomy from OAO.
In other unmanned space activities during 1968, Surveyor 7 began the year by successfully soft landing on the surface of the moon in January. Preceded by four Surveyor successes, each contributing vital information to our manned landing program, Surveyor 7 accomplished a difficult touchdown in the lunar highlands near the large crater Tycho. There, the spacecraft began examining the moon for strictly scientific purposes. Again, Dr. John Naugle.
The Surveyor 7 completed the initial automated phase of lunar exploration. It, the combination of Ranger, the five surveyors that landed successfully, the orbiter program, all gave us the necessary scientific information, the necessary data on the bearing strength, gave us the necessary orbital coverage, the maps and so forth that we needed. So the next exploration of the moon will be conducted by man himself when he goes there, walks around, returns samples to the Earth for more detailed analysis than what we've been able to do remotely, and to leave behind scientific experiments on the surface of the moon.
OGO, OSO, Explorer, GEOS, Pioneer. Those are names of other automated probes and satellites launched during the year. Launched to continue our space-based studies of the sun, interplanetary space, and to examine and map the Earth itself and the surrounding environment. Sounding rocket launches, like the one you hear in the background, constituted another major chapter in the year's scientific investigations. Hundreds of these small vehicles were sent aloft from NASA's Wallops Island, Virginia, to gather atmospheric and weather data in a region too high for balloons and too low to be observed by orbiting satellites. While no planetary flights were conducted last year, final preparations were underway for the upcoming 1969 mission to Mars for a pair of Mariner spacecraft. 1968 also marked key decisions for future planetary exploration in the 1970s. Plans calling for unmanned Mars orbital and landing missions, and perhaps automated visits to Jupiter, Uranus, and Saturn toward the end of the next decade. In the area of advanced air and space research for the future, two important and highly successful test flight programs were concluded. The X-15 rocket plane, having flown faster and higher than any other aircraft, flew its 199th and final mission to the fringe of space. During its 10-year lifetime, the X-15 flew at hypersonic speeds of over 4,000 miles an hour and at altitudes of more than 65 miles, laying essential research groundwork for future aircraft and spacecraft alike. Also flying its final mission during the year was the giant XB-70 supersonic research plane. The XB-70, the country's largest jet aircraft to date, provided vital in-flight data to aid in the design and handling of upcoming commercial supersonic transports. Additional 1968 aeronautical research included intense effort to reduce the noise level of both present and future jet engines. Experimental flight tests with planes that can take off and land vertically, but which fly forward at conventional speeds, and from NASA's Flight Research Center at Edwards, California, strange-looking boat-shaped craft called lifting bodies were the focus of attention during the year. Wingless lifting bodies use their unique shape to enable them to glide through the air and land much like conventional airplanes. They're being flight-tested for possible application to space missions of the future. Dropped from beneath the wing of a mother plane at 40,000 feet, a manned lifting body used its own propulsion system for the first time during the year, enabling it to climb even higher into the atmosphere before gliding to a successful ground landing. The man in charge of NASA's overall advanced research efforts is Mr. James Beggs, who commented on the status of our lifting body program.
We've made a number of flights throughout the year. They have been almost without exception very successful and have progressed to the point where we are coming close to being ready to put one of these things in space and bring it back down through reentry. We will be continuing to make flights in the coming year. Now, we're doing this work, of course, with an eye to improving our capability to operate back and forth to space, directed to the problems we will undoubtedly be encountering as we enter the next phase of space exploration, which will probably involve the use of a large space station with logistics vehicles going back and forth. And we want both a more versatile and a less costly method of bringing these craft back to the Earth, so that it's not necessary to deploy the whole fleet every time we want to resupply.
James Beggs continued that the year's advanced research activities ran the gamut of air and space needs of the near and distant future. Electronics research in Boston, guidance and navigation studies in Virginia, California investigations involving life, including man, in the flight environment. Cleveland was the scene of research in developing new kinds of rocket engines using electricity as the source of propulsion. And far off in the Nevada desert, testing of prototype nuclear rocket propulsion systems progressed steadily.
Progressing to the point where we will unquestionably be ready to enter into the design of a flight-weight vehicle in the coming year. We have now accumulated over 400 minutes of test time on various of our nuclear prototypes. The program has progressed almost without a hitch. Moved forward each year as was planned. And we're anticipating in the coming year the progression into Flight Weight Harbor.
Mr. James Beggs.
5, 4, we have ignition. All engines are running. We have liftoff. We have liftoff at 7 a.m.
In the country's manned spaceflight program, 1968 was a year for Apollo. Preceded by two unmanned test launches in the year, astronauts Walter Schirra, Don Eisele, and Walter Cunningham took man's first step into space for Apollo on October 11th. A crucial 11-day shakedown cruise in Earth orbit. All went well. So well, in fact, that objectives for the second manned mission, Apollo 8, were substantially increased.
This is Apollo 8 coming to you live from the moon. We've had to switch the TV camera now.
Apollo 8 astronauts Frank Borman, James Lovell, and William Anders became the first men to view the moon at close range. Launched on December 21st, the men entered lunar orbit 3 days later. There, from an altitude of 70 miles above the surface, they navigated, took photographs, scouted the lunar terrain, and transmitted live television pictures to the people on Earth before returning home themselves to a successful splashdown in the Pacific Ocean on December 27th. The historic and flawless Apollo 8 mission provided a giant step forward toward achieving a manned moon landing in 1969. And from start to finish, the flight of Apollo 8 was crammed with dramatic events, beginning with the launch itself.
4, 3, 2, 1, 0. We have commit. We have liftoff. Liftoff at 7:51 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Live television pictures of the Earth, with commentary from a vantage point never reached before by humans.
Show you the Earth. It's a beautiful, beautiful view. With predominantly blue background and just huge covers of white clouds. Particularly one very strong vortex up near the Terminator.
Personal observations as to the moon's appearance.
Moon is a different thing to each one of us. I think that each one carries his own impressions of what he's seen today. I know my own impression is that it's a vast, lonely, forbidding type existence or expanse of nothing. It looks rather like clouds and clouds of pumice stone. And it certainly would not appear to be a very inviting place to live or work.
And a special Christmas Eve service for the people back home, 250,000 miles away.
And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning was the first day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. Let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. And the evening and the morning was the second day.
God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you. All of you on the good earth.
NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, has presented a special report, Highlights of the Year, Air and Space Milestones for 1968. This is Kennedy Ludlam speaking.